Welcome to Canary in a Cornfield, a podcast from the Harkin Institute for Public Policy and Citizen Engagement, where we explore how the policies that shape our food and farming systems impact our health, our communities, and our future. As most of our listeners probably know, the Harkin Institute was founded upon the retirement of longtime public servant and Iowa legend Tom Harkin in order to continue doing high-quality work on the policy issues that were important to him. My guest for this episode is one of the most influential voices in public health and food policy today. Professor Marion Nessel is the Paulette Goddard Professor of Nutrition, Food Science, and Public Health Emerita at New York University, a department she not only chaired for 15 years, but essentially pioneered when she founded one of the nation's first academic food studies programs. Dr. Nessel has spent decades examining the complex intersection of science, economics, and corporate power. She's the author of over a dozen books, including the classic Food Politics and her more recent, deeply personal memoir, Slow Cooked. Nessel is a recipient of the James Beard Leadership Award and the Edinburgh Medal for her contributions to humanity through science, and is also known through her popular blog, foodpolitics.com. We're going to be talking about her latest work, which is What to Eat Now, the indispensable guide to good food, how to find it, and why it matters. So with that, I'm very excited to get into the interview with Professor Marion Nessel. I am honored today to be joined by professor and author Marion Nessel. Thank you so much for joining me today. I'm really excited to have this conversation.
Glad to be here.
So I'm a big fan of the Iowa Farmers Union Lunch and Learn. I think that was my inspiration for starting to do this podcast. And so you were on there a little over a month ago, and I was sad I got scooped. But the good news is that the dietary guidelines came out after that, and I'm really curious to hear your thoughts about those. Then, of course, the big news is that you have a new book out, or a new version of your book, What to Eat. And maybe we can start there. So tell me a little bit about why you decided you wanted to update the original version.
It was a pandemic project. I was stuck in Ithaca, where my partner lived, and everything was closed. I couldn't do the kind of research that I usually do. And I needed a pandemic project to keep from going mad. And I looked at What to Eat, which came out in 2006, and I thought, this book is a timeless classic. It's pretty terrific, and it reads really well. But, it's a little out of date. I'll just update it. So that was the plan. And I proposed to the publisher that I updated, and I was sure it wouldn't take me more than 6 months to do it. And here we are 4 years later. It turned out to be a very big job, and I've never underestimated the amount of work involved in a project as much as I underestimated this one. I just had no idea how much it changed at the macro level, at the micro level. Every single section had to be redone, some more than others, but they all needed redoing. And for one thing, every single product that I had used as an example in 2006 no longer existed. Let's just start there. That's frozen yogurt. That's the big tragedy of the only Nestle product I ever bought. And they don't make it anymore. So I must have been the only person. In fact, I asked somebody at the company, why did you stop making that? And they said, you were the only one who bought it. Okay. So that was just the starter. And then as I would go around, this is a book about food issues and how to think about food issues using supermarkets as an organizing device. And I went around the supermarket aisle by aisle talking about whatever the issues were that came up in that section. And I just couldn't believe how much new research I had to do. New research, new regulations, new things that were happening. Some of them were expected, some of them were unexpected. And the replacement of full sugar sodas by bottled waters was an enormous change. The enormous increase in organics. 20 years ago, You could hardly find organic anything at a store outside of Whole Foods. Now they're everywhere. International foods throughout the supermarket now. A really huge one was the entire reorganization of supermarkets in order to make room for online orders. Online ordering was just barely starting then, and now it's 20 to 30% of grocery sales. And I remember walking into the Wegmans in Ithaca, and the entire store had been reorganized. Couldn't find a thing. So I went to talk to the manager and said, "What on earth happened here?" And he said, "We had to create a very large space, which is where the beer used to be, for storing online orders. So when people came to pick them up, we could get them out of the store quickly." So I started asking questions about how did you decide how to reorganize and that kind of thing. And at that point, I was obviously treading on secret territory. And he stopped answering questions and said I would have to talk to central administration about that, which I tried to do and failed. One of the things that was really interesting was I could hardly get anybody to talk to me about this stuff.
Did you get the sense that they're just so careful about their trade secrets, or is it that they worry that they might be subject to criticism, or
maybe both? I don't know. Even when I had promises where people would talk to me, and I couldn't get people to talk to me.
Interesting.
Even when I called the consumer lines on packages, rarely did I get a response. Sometimes I did, but very rarely.
So a few of the changes that you mentioned sound positive to my mind. More organic products, more international options.
More water.
More water versus sugary drinks. That definitely seems like a step in the right direction. Were there any changes that stood out to you as going in the opposite direction?
Those are the ones that stayed the same. The enormous marketing of what we're now calling ultra-processed foods, that's also new. The concept of ultra-processed was not invented until 2009, so that's a relatively new concept.